Hi, I am the Strategist Cowboy. Today I am going to review two different type beers with different ABV levels. One normal ABV porter from the UK and one fairly strong ale from Belgium, except the owner family is from the Netherlands. This week's two contestants are the Market Porter from Thornbridge Brewery, and the other one is the Blonde or Blonde from St. Pierre Abbey, St. Peter's Abbey.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Our first contestant for this week is the porter beer Market Porter from the Thornbridge Brewery in the UK. The ingredients in the Market Porter beer assortment are water, malted barley, wheat malt, hops, and yeast. The malts are of the sorts Pale, Munich, Brown, Crystal, Wheat, and Black. The hops are of the American sorts Willamette, Mount Hood, and the Slovenian sort Styrian Golding. The expiration date on this particular beer is the end of August 2023. I purchased this beer in late November 2022. It has been standing in my cooler since. The Market Porter beer assortment comes in a size 33 centiliters, i.e. about 11 liquid ounces bottle. The three-folded bottle label is mostly dark in color and partly gold with a white text on the front bottom label. There is no depicting image on the bottle labels. There is just art. The Market Porter beer assortment cost me 26 kronor, i.e. $2.52. That is 92 cents per every 4 ounces of beer. 92 cents per every 4 ounces of beer. Systembolaget says that the preferred serving temperature on this beer is 8 to 10 degrees Celsius, i.e. about 46 to 50 degrees Fahrenheit. The brewery says nothing about preferred serving temperature. The Market Porter beer assortment has got a 4.5% ABV. 4.5%. How about the experience then? Not a very intense aroma exactly, but let's see here. A little bit more aroma here, but not much. A little brown sugary aroma, two fingers tall head, and of course black, pitch black, I think, yes. The first impression is I like this beer. It's not I mean, it's a good beer. And it's... not that rich for a porter, but maybe it is for a porter. So it's 4.5%. So, but it's fairly rich, I'd say. For a porter. And it's... if it's bread-like, if it's bread-like, it's... pumpernickel bread. It is. It's a yeasty. Let's see. I don't think so. Taste on my palate. Well. I don't know. Doesn't differ from the taste in the rest of my mouth. Sweet or dry, it's... not very sweet. No, it's more... It's almost more dry. Well, it's not sweet anyway. It's not very bitter or... hoppy that I can sense. I can't sense the hoppiness in it. But it, there should be. And it's not very bitter, as I said. It's not candy-like. There's no fruitiness in it. Perhaps some spices. Yeah, I'd say there are some spices. The undertone is a little bit spicy, I think. I think that it is. A carbonation level, I don't know yet. Is it creamy? No. It's not acidic. And I wouldn't say that there are any aberrations in it. No, there's no aberration in it. It's dark roasted, of course, and it's well, I don't know. Let's see here. Does it taste like bread flavored with wort? No, it doesn't. I don't think so. Pineapple. No. Pine needle? No. Apricot? No. Light bread? No. Banana? No. Straw-like. It's a bit straw-like. I don't think there is syrup in it. Not much anyway, if there are, is, I mean, but no, I wouldn't say that it tastes like syrup anyway, or honey, or licorice. Or clove, or fudge, or chocolate. A little bit coffee-like. No raspberry, no blueberry, no mango, no tangerine. Excuse me. No raisin, I think. No vanilla. It's kind of empty in its taste, a little bit, because there aren't many flavors in it. But I don't think it was an expensive beer. Let's see how much it cost. 26 kroner, $2.52. Well, it's not very cheap. But I don't think it's a bad beer. Definitely not. But it's not something I would buy another again. I mean, I think it's... What about grading then? I think this beer is... how many devils do I grade this beer? Well, since it is a porter, I grade this beer 5 devils out of 10 possible. So in the middle, when I grade beers, I grade beers from 1 to 10, and 1 being very bad, or 0 even being very, very bad, and 10 being very good. So it's not a grade that starts from decent to very good or excellent. But it starts from very poor to good or very good. So 5 is in the middle. And that's what it gets, a 5. Okay, let's move on to our next contestant. Our second contestant for this week is the blonde or blonde beer assortment from the brewery in the monastery of St. Peter's Abbey in Flandern, not far from Bruges. They also have a French name on the monastery, identical but French. The name is St. Pierre. The owner, Swinkels Family Brewers, are actually purported as Dutch lords or even royalties, but they have expanded beyond the Netherlands, and this beer was brewed in Belgium. Flandern, Dutch, it's basically the same thing. The beer assortment is brewed with water, barley malt, wheat malt, and most likely hops and yeast. The best before date on this particular beer can is January 2024. I purchased this beer in late December 2022. It has been standing in my cooler since. At present date, it is late April 2023. The can contains 33 centiliters, i.e. about 11 liquid ounces. The can is mostly yellow, but with a white horizontal strip with a text saying blonde, blonde. This St. Peter's blonde beer assortment cost me just 19 Swedish kronor, i.e. about $1.84. That is 67 cents per 4 ounces of beer. I don't expect too much of this particular beer assortment of theirs, but I get the feeling by looking at their website that they must surely have some good bottled beers. This is more of an export beer. Export beers usually don't have the same quality as domestic beers. The preferred serving temperature for the blonde is, according to Systembolaget, 8 to 10 degrees Celsius, i.e. about 46 to 50 degrees Fahrenheit. The blonde beer assortment has got a 6.5% ABV. 6.5%. How about the experience then? It's got a nearly 3 fingers tall head. It's light in color and it's clear, at least now, but I haven't poured up the whole beer. The whole beer. So, but I can see my fingers very, very sharply through the glass. The contours are sharp on my fingers. And it's yellow-orangey in color. Clear. At least so far. The aroma is Belgian export beer aroma, actually. I think there is a thing, export beer aroma from Belgium. I really think it's a thing. That Belgian export beers have a certain aroma. It's a little bit sweet. My first impression is this is an export beer from Belgium. It tastes like it too. It's rich. I don't think it's bread-like or yeasty. Let's see, I'll pour up some more. So we'll see how clear it still is or if it's cloudy now. No, it's still clear. And I poured up the whole beer. I wouldn't say bread-like, I wouldn't say yeasty. But maybe malty, yeah, perhaps. Taste on my palate is honey taste a bit. But not a very good one. And it's I think it's not sweet, but it's not dry either. So normal, perhaps. It's not very bitter. Or hoppy. It's not candy-like. Is it fruity? No, I don't think so. It's somewhat spicy. Not unusual with Belgian blonde beers. The undertone is spiciness and sugary. Not sugary, but well. Yeah, I don't know. Carbonation level, I don't know yet. It's not creamy. It's not acidic. But there are some aberrations or some aberration in it. But I don't know what it is. It's a little bit artificial. I mean, I've tried beers like this one. From Belgium before, And they are alike. They're similar to each other. And I think it's syrup in it, but I don't think it's honey. But I may be wrong. But there are some aberrations, or some aberration in it. It's a light beer, a blonde beer. And it's filtered. Does it taste like pineapple? No? Pine needle? Almost, but not quite. Apricot, no. Light bread. No, I don't think so. Well, perhaps. I've already gone through the bread-like. If it was bread-like or not, I don't think it's very bread-like. Banana, yeah, it's got banana taste. But it's an artificial banana taste. Straw, no, syrup. Well, syrup or honey, but it may be the banana. So I may have been wrong. Or it may be both or three of them. But banana, syrupy, honey-like, it is. No licorice. Perhaps a little bit clove-like, but I don't know if they got clove in it, but I think it's the taste is similar. It's not fudgy, not chocolate. Not coffee-like. Raspberry, no. Blueberry, no. Mango, no. Tangerine, no. Raisin, no. Vanilla, no. Okay, what about grading then? How many devils do I grade this beer? I grade this beer because it's got an artificial banana taste. So I graded 4 devils out of 10 possible. But it is an export beer. And I'm sure they have better beers than this one. Beers. I'm absolutely sure of it. But this one, no, not so much. I don't think it's on the website either. So not surprising. Okay, absolutely don't drink and operate heavy machines, military or civilian. Drink responsibly or not at all. Don't drink at all if you're underage or pregnant. I am shifting topic from military matters now. Let me warm you up with my comic testimony. My comic testimony. Since mankind is only 6,000 years old, beginning with Adam and Eve, the dinosaurs must have lived in the Garden of Eden. I do not know why all of them suddenly made their mark in sediments by leaving their fossilized remains in hard-to-reach places and then disappeared from the face of the earth, apparently without any good reason. Then the ground was turned upside down, so that all the dinosaur fossils, which turned into fossils almost immediately in the sediments, were sorted and arranged neatly so that all the remains of primitive life forms were placed in the lower parts of the sediment further down, and all the higher life forms ended up on top. But fortunately for us, none of the bones from the other animal species, especially the mammals, which still live here on Earth today, were mixed with the dinosaur bones, not even in a single known case. Then there was a flood, but fortunately, a guy named Noah was able to build a ship and gather all of today's living animal species, two of every kind, and herd them into the ship. I guess he had some kind of magnifying glass, because he had to travel to every continent and collect ants and other insects, about 100 million of them, and accommodate them in his ship. He must have been well prepared, and he must have lived for hundreds of thousands of years to finish this job. But since mankind is only 6,000 years old, he probably had supernatural help, even though the scriptures do not mention such a small of a detail in the context. It must have been a mighty big ship to collect and house all these species, two of each kind of animals, and feed them on board with all the different kinds of food they were specialized to eat. As for the carnivores, he must have fed them with other mammals. And think of the water tanks and water systems on board the ship. How amazing were not they? Imagine that small detail. Noah and his wife and children must have moved at supernatural speeds from animal pairs to animal pairs to feed them on board the ark, all the hundreds of millions of different sized animals. Only the knowledge of what all the animals should be fed with must have been acquired over the course of, I don't know, a month? Then Noah, after 40 days and 40 nights of constant rain, sailed from continent to release all the animals and insects, and he did not confuse two pairs with any other two pairs. Everyone with a certain DNA relationship ended up on one continent, and everyone with another certain DNA relationship ended up on another continent. And he managed to do it without a single mistake. What a fellow! Imagine the work, 100 million insects twice. It must have been particularly difficult to keep the animals he released on the different continents from eating each other quite soon, before they had offspring that could mate with their siblings, because there were only two of each species. We know this is true, because it says so in the Holy Scriptures, which are not written by men, but by God himself. Woe to him who does not believe in the Holy Scriptures. Seriously scrutinizing the story of Noah's Ark. First, I must mention that the word ark, or by extension, arca, probably has a symbolic meaning in the story of Noah's Ark, because the word arca means church vault in the not completely extinct Roman language. But it is difficult for me to determine the origin of the word and when the word originated. Without going into the literal truth content of the Bible, one can say that the fact that there are several different continents separated from each other for millions of years, with a variety of animal species, does not exactly speak for the literal believers who believe in the Garden of Eden and Noah's Ark. Suppose all animals emanated from the Garden of Eden. Suppose that it rained for 40 days and 40 nights, so that the whole earth was submerged in Noah's time, and that Noah's ark landed on Mount Ararat with animals coming from one and the same continent, taken from the offspring of the Garden of Eden, which are not all related species, according to the Bible creationism. Then Noah's ark, with all its different species of animals of both sexes on board, must have landed in either South America, Europe, Australia, or Africa, for example, continents that have distanced themselves from each other for millions of years, according to most biblical believers. This makes it virtually impossible for some animals to spread to other parts of the world, no matter where Mount Ararat was located. Ararat can only have been in one and the same continent, whether it is in Eurasia or Australia, Africa, Antarctica, or America. If some tropical animals would have been able to migrate from Eurasia across the Bering Strait between Russia and Alaska down to the tropical environment of South America, then these must have consisted of several animals of the same type. And whether the species is llama or camel does not matter, or any of the other physiologically similar species, which today live on different continents and which live in the same type of environment. They still have the same physiognomic abilities to do the migration. And what about what we today call species migration, both among insects and to some extent mammals? Could not all the same species migrate across the Bering Strait and survive in unfamiliar environments? Why then do you not see Eurasian insect species in abundance in South America, but only South American insect species in abundance? Did some species get the impulse to cross the Bering Strait at the same time as other species decided to stay in Eurasia, in the case of each individual insect? Thousands of billions of individual insects of some species all stayed in Eurasia, but thousands of billions of individual insects of many, many other species all went across the strait without a single individual exception. This if they could even have made such an amazing geographical journey as a species. One possible objection to the reasoning about a species' sudden urge to start migrating is that in all cases, without exception, the individuals that remained succeeded in becoming extinct on their continent of origin, except that it is not very plausible. The more examples there are of physiologically similar, albeit genetically different, species located on different continents, the more crushing my sub-theory becomes for the creationists. Since the creationists claim that there is no such thing as macroevolution, it sure is strange that the species generally differs so much between the continents. I suppose the Orthodox Christians may object that the environments in Eurasia and Alaska and the Mexican desert may have been different from today's environment there some 6,000 years ago. But that makes it even more unlikely that two species with similar physiognomy and the same type of food intake would not both have made that alleged journey. Thank you and see you later, alligator, at a wild crocodile.